So the happiness of concentration can almost sound like an oxymoron, you know. It's like concentration, you know. It's like shape up, pay attention, get with it. You know, we can sit on our cushions sometimes and, you know, give ourselves those kinds of, you know, instructions or criticisms. Like, you know, come on, Sharon, you know, you've been meditating all these years. What's wrong with you? You know, just concentrate. And actually, concentration doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that in real life, in actually, you know, ordinary life, and it doesn't work like that in our practice. Concentration is supported by ease, by tranquility, by joy, by happiness. We notice that in our daily lives, that, you know, sometimes we can get so concentrated on something. You know, we're, you know, arranging flowers, or we're cooking, or we're doing art, or we're, you know, working in the, you know, in the wood shop, or whatever it is that we're doing. And it's like, whoa, really? You know, 2 hours pass? That's, you know, that's awesome. That when we're kind of really engaged with something and happy doing it, we don't have to, like, give ourselves those mean words telling ourselves to kind of pay attention. It's fun. So the happiness of concentration, again, it can sometimes in our mind seem kind of like an oxymoron. It's like, really? Really? Meditation is supposed to be fun? What? How is this, you know, how does this work? Well, maybe not fun exactly, but anyway. But when we've established concentration, when we've established stability in our practice, we can then use it, number four, to inquire directly with mindfulness into the nature of our experience, into how things truly are. So it's really important to cultivate a quality of concentration, and it's also important to kind of have a sense of how to go about that, how to do that. So those two really kind of play with each other. Sometimes we don't even know what's concentration, what's number four, what's number five, what's the happiness of concentration, what's the happiness of mindfulness, which is actually just simply seeing how things actually are. Ayakima says, concentration is supported by the loving kindness in one's heart. One of the 11 benefits that the Buddha teaches of loving kindness is that the mind is quickly concentrated. So, you know, the work that we did yesterday and Friday night are really kind of the seeds, if you will, or the ingredients, if you will, for concentration. If we look at the discourses, if we look at the Buddha's teachings, we find that he talks not so much about cultivating concentration per se, but cultivating the supporting factors for concentration. What supports it? What supports the opening into concentration? The Buddha says, for one who is virtuous and endowed with virtue, we don't have to have, you know, we don't have to like have an act of will. Okay, may I not be remorseful? We were working with that yesterday. It's just there is no remorse. You know, somebody says, you know, somebody murdered somebody. I don't have to worry about remorse about doing something unskillful. You know, it's like I know that I'm free of that. So there's no need for an act of will to not be remorseful. It's just I'm not remorseful. I don't have to have remorse because I know my virtue. I know what's true. So there's no need, the Buddha says, for an act of will. It just arises for one who is virtuous, that there's no need for an act of will. For one free of remorse, he says, there's no need for an act of will. May gladness arise. You know, sort of the ease of a life that doesn't, that isn't filled with all kinds of complicated remorse and reactivities for all the unskillful things that I've done. You know, oh, just life is easier. For one who is glad at heart, there is no need for an active will. May I be joyful. You know? Understand. For one who is joyful, there is no need for an active will. May my body be relaxed and serene. We know that when we're joyful, we go, oh, yeah, my body's pretty relaxed here. For one of serene body, there is no need for an active will. May I feel happiness. Yeah. You've noticed that over the weekend, didn't you? You know, like Friday night when we went out and just sort of relaxed in the beauty of nature. It's like you didn't have to like tell yourself, you know, you should enjoy this, you know. You know, it just does. It just happens. We don't have to manufacture it. For one who is happy, there is no need for an active will. May my mind be concentrated. It's a natural law for one who is happy that the mind will be concentrated. For one who is concentrated, there is no need for an active will. May I know and see things as they really are, that sense of mindfulness. It's a natural law for one with a concentrated mind to know and see things as they really are. And then seeing things as they really are leads to the capacity to be with our, to be with life with freedom from suffering. So that's the Buddhist, those are the Buddhist words, those are the Buddhist teachings. And, you know, we kind of can really inquire into that much more deeply and repeat it to ourselves, that by living, you know, those what are called path factors, by inquiring into, you know, happiness or ease or serenity or joy, you know, that by living in those qualities of heart and mind, that we simply reduce the stressors in our lives and allow for the opening of concentration. Again, it's sort of like, you know, one of, you know, art or cooking, you know, something that we're just really so happy doing. It's easy to be concentrated. Huh? So to kind of make ourselves be concentrating about doing an art project or about singing or something like that is actually a way of actually interfering with our capacity to do that well. I originally wrote in, when I wrote this, I wrote, without exertion, we begin to wear away the habits of the grasping mind, the mind that kind of tries to hang on. And this morning as I was reading that, it's like, without exertion, well, maybe I shouldn't say without exertion, because it's like, and so what I wrote instead is, in simple, daily, diligent practice, you know, which there is a certain quality of exertion, you know. Even in all those things I'm naming, you know, whether it's carpentry or gardening or cooking or whatever it is, there's a quality of waking up and exert and energy, bringing energy to it. But it's not the kind of stressful, tight energy that we sometimes think of when we think of concentration. So basically, concentration is working with the doorway, if you will, marked joy or happiness that comes from some of those other practices to kind of find ourselves in a place where we it's easier to settle. And using some of those other practices to help ourselves settle down. And in many ways, concentration is about not doing what is not helpful. So it's more about, and this is where I think somebody asked a question about relinquishment or letting go. Many of our teachings really are about letting go. But again, if we don't understand the whole, you know, the whole framework, we can kind of make letting go into some kind of tight, you know, thing we're supposed to be doing, rather than a kind of releasing and easeful space You know, so that, you know, it's like relinquishment, you know, the word relinquishment, or Pema Chodron, I think in one of her chapters has a chapter entitled Renunciation. And she says that when people get their Buddha name, or I forget what it's called, of renunciation, they go, oh, really? I'd like one that says joy or something like that. Because we think of renunciation as such a hard, difficult thing. But renunciation is just like having, you know, that kind of tight grasp on trying to kind of get things to work out in some particular way. And it's about cultivating the capacity to just let go and be just here, present with what is. So concentration is more about letting go of what doesn't help than doing something that we're supposed to be doing. And that requires a bit of faith in the teachings and faith in our experience, which we cultivate gradually over time. It's not like a one-shot deal. And sometimes, again, in the teachings, it can be like, well, just let go, you know. But it's really kind of a wearing away of our tendency to grasp than of something that we kind of, you know, turn the switch on and then, okay, just do it. And if you don't do it right, then you're wrong or something like that. So concentration is working with, and we've heard this analogy many times before, the monkeys of our minds, you know, those monkeys that kind of swing back and forth. Ajahn Chah has a wonderful image that I really resonated with. He said for him it's sort of like, you know, a flock of birds where something, you know, will startle the birds, and not just one of them flies off, but the whole flock takes off. You know, and we can kind of know how that, you know, how that works in our own minds, or how the monkeys just kind of run, you know, ransack through our meditation practice, where we're sitting and it's like, well, I'm really supposed to be kind of mindful and concentrated, but all I can think about is, you know, those guests that are coming and all the things that I have to do, or, you know, that whatever, you know, whatever it is that are, you know, the monkeys that are running through our minds. And we can really recognize those images. You know, I see some smiles as I look around the room. We kind of recognize that. And, you know, our teachers tell us to kind of let ourselves be aware of those monkeys or those birds as they move. And I've said this in a talk before, that sometimes we can kind of secretly imagine that our teachers don't really understand just how many monkeys I have, or how many birds I have, or quite how, you know, reactive they are. That really, my monkeys are like really much stronger than they really think. And they, you know, if they really knew what, you know, what my monkeys are like, then for sure that they're, you know, they would be like, oh, Sharon, please, you know, here you think you're a meditator, and for heaven's sakes, you're teaching, and what on earth were you thinking? That so we can kind of have this secret kind of view that if I were really doing this properly, I would either not have monkeys at all, or they would be really well-behaved monkeys. You know, there would be two of them, and they would do what I tell them to do. And we're instructed to let them go and bring concentration and focus and rest our awareness. And yet, you know, it's hard. It's hard. It's like, what does that really mean? What does that mean for us? And for starters, I think it's crucial that we understand the difference between mind and mind. And in the readings that I do, even sometimes, like I read a lot of Ajahn Chah, who's an enlightened master, even in the translations of his teachings, often the word mind is used to mean two different things, at least two different things, sometimes three different things. In Western teaching, sometimes it means simply the workings of the brain, you know, what mind means. But in some of the Eastern teachings, sometimes mind is referring to the contents of the mind, if the monkeys themselves, if you will, you know, so that, you know, the contents, you know, the emotions, the thoughts, you know, the just the whatever it is, the birds, whatever it is that's arising. And sometimes mind refers to those kinds of arisings, and other times the word mind refers to the awareness that is larger than it all. The awareness, if you will, that sees the birds. I don't know if I can do it, but Thich Nhat Hanh has this wonderful image that, again, you've seen me use before, and he's, you know, he says, you know, what's that? You know, and so I say, you know, what is it? What do you think? You know, what? And he says, well, actually, what it is it's a picture of the sky, and there's a bird in it. You know, and you know, and so sometimes the word mind refers to the birds, and sometimes the word mind refers to the sky and to the awareness. And it's important to understand that distinction, because otherwise we can get really confused and kind of imagine that the challenge really is to have an empty sky. If we really were doing our meditation practice correctly, there would be an empty sky. Now, it is true that sometimes there is such a thing as an empty sky, but it's not true that that therefore becomes the criterion for a wholesome meditation practice. So it's sort of useful. I just say that as a little footnote, because it can be really confusing when we read or when we hear somebody speaking about, you know, awareness or mind, that we have to kind of really look to see what exactly are they meaning here. And so, again, even reading Ajahn Chah, I have to kind of pause sometimes and go, what exactly is he referring to? Because he uses mind and mind interchangeably, or at least the translators do. Whether he used the same word or not, I of course don't know. So we can't manage the birds and the monkeys of our being, of our minds, by squashing them, or by what I call, you know, genocide, you know, monkey genocide. You know, let's like kill off all the birds. Whether, by the way, it's internal or external, this gets into a whole other dimension that we're not really getting into in our retreat. But sometimes we can imagine that if the world were working properly, you know, there would be no bad things going on, you know. And so what we need to do is kill off all the bad things, and then everybody will be happy, you know. Or we need to kill off all the bad things internally, and, you know, we have to have some kind of genocide here and kill off what is unacceptable in order for there to be ease, in order for there to be concentration. So we can't actually do that. We actually can't succeed in doing that, even if we tried. Or rather, in our meditation practice, we sort of maybe perhaps can, in a way that's not so skillful. And sometimes people actually use meditation practice to, if you will, basically dissociate or zone out. Sometimes people are very good at, if you will, concentrating. But what they may be doing, of course I would have no way of knowing from the outside, but what they may be doing is basically turning away from experience, so that when difficult experiences arise, you know, we're sort of dissociating or turning away from them in a way that's kind of zoning out, and that looks like, or maybe even feels like, serene concentration, but is basically spacing out. So we can kind of sort of a little bit do that, but the way that we would notice that is that that kind of practice, when it gets translated into real life, is that people have a hard time dealing with real life. Because in real life, we've got all kinds of pleasant, unpleasant, nice, crappy, you know, various kinds of things happening. And that we often, that we would find that then we couldn't bring our meditation practice directly into, say, our relationships or our kind of relationship with, say, politics or world hunger or the climate change or whatever, because that requires us to kind of actually engage with something that is messy and difficult and not under our control, and that we can't quite space out and engage with it at the same time. So a way that we would know that maybe that's happening is somebody who's a really, really strong meditator, but who can't engage with real relationships, in whether they're intimate relationships, relationships with my own feelings, difficult, unpleasant, yucky feelings, or other people, or with the world, with the world at large. We also can't make our minds peaceful by extraordinary effort or criticizing our minds or thoughts or emotions or images or perceptions or criticizing ourselves or others by making monkeys and birds wrong somehow. And that kind of bears repeating, that we can't make our minds peaceful by the effort to criticize our minds or thoughts or emotions or images or perceptions or criticizing ourselves or others by making the contents of our minds wrong. You know, by making the birds, if you will, wrong, or the monkeys wrong. And we can kind of see how we can kind of get into that trap a little bit, where we kind of have this sense that, you know, I need to kind of fix myself. I need to not have this arising, you know, whatever the this is. You know, and it can be different for each of us. You know, and that's really what's wrong with me. And furthermore, it's been wrong with me since I was 4, or that thing that happened when I was 2, or, you know, that there's something wrong with me that has to be fixed in order for me to be okay. That's the effort to somehow, it's sort of like, you know, seeing a monkey or a bird and saying, you know, your fur is a little ruffled there. Well, it's like, let me just fix that, you know. And I'm going to make room. I know this is heavy, and so I'm going to make room for questions at the end. So, you know, that we kind of try to fix things as they arise. Now, that doesn't mean that there is no action, but again, the inquiry is in how do we cultivate a mind and a heart that is spacious and at ease, and that moves into action out of love and care and compassion and peace, with the possibility of generating more peace rather than generating more war. But again, that's sort of another, it's kind of another talk, but kind of not another talk. Okay. But when the monkeys and birds and rustle through our minds without any kind of guidance or without any kind of like, okay, how do I relate to these arisings? That really becomes the question. And we need to have some skill at how we relate to those arisings, which is different from genocide. So it's important just to see that there's a difference. There are lots of metaphors in the teaching, and in Ajahn Lee compares the skill of concentration to the skills of building a bridge in the midst of a turbulent river. It may even, I think it's from the Buddha also. The Buddha says that the bridge, you know, you have this need to build a bridge across this like turbulent river, which is, again, it's a different image than the birds and the monkeys. But basically, we need to not like collapse into these turbulent arisings, but how do we navigate them? And one image is a bridge, and on one side of the river, the pillar is sila, or morality, that freedom from remorse that the Buddha talks about in the factors of awakening, and that's one pillar. On the other side is wisdom, of just seeing how life works on this planet, seeing that there are there is stress, seeing that there is impermanence, seeing clearly that we're not in control of everything, you know. So those are the two pillars on the side of the river, but the pillar that's in the middle of the river is really the pillar of concentration. It's the pillar, and it's the pillar that's kind of hardest to plant, but needs to be planted in a very sturdy way, because, you know, the river, the rains come and the river gets very turbulent. And so the challenge is for that pillar to be strong enough that it can support the bridge of seeing clearly, if you will, that it can support the bridge even when there's a lot of turbulence. Even when there's a lot, you know, going on in the mind, whether it's internally, there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of kind of proliferating thought, or externally, like in our world today, there's all this stuff going on all the time, you know. And so how do we support some kind of stability, even with all this stuff going on, so that we're not collapsing into it every day? We know that kind of dilemma, you know. We go, how do I even know what's going on? How do I even know the news? You know, because it's, when I do, it kind of this like suction, it kind of carries me off into this really icky, unpleasant, really unwholesome state, where I either want to kind of kill myself or kill somebody else, you know, but it's just really, it really challenging. So concentration really is that center pillar of, you know, cultivating that capacity to have some skill with the turbulence. And that is the mind that we are training when we're kind of inquiring into concentration. I have a story that I tell. Some of you have heard it before, but for me it was a lovely metaphor, and it may or may not be useful for you because you haven't had the experience, so it may or may not be a useful metaphor, but I'll tell you the story anyway, in case it's useful. Some of you know I go to Bali pretty much every year and spend about 6 weeks there in amazing, different, wonderful culture. And I live about 10 minutes away from this place that's called the Sacred Monkey Forest. And in Bali, often there are sacred places around the temples, and often there are monkeys in those sacred places that are considered, that the monkeys are considered sacred as well. And in this forest, it's a 31-acre forest surrounding this incredibly beautiful place, surrounding this incredibly beautiful temple, there are about 600 monkeys. And the monkeys are completely free to roam and do whatever it is that monkeys do. And if you go into the forest, it is totally inevitable that you will encounter monkeys because there are 600 of them. It's their home. It's where they live. It's what they do. And they can be doing all the sorts of things that monkeys do. Everything that monkeys do, including sometimes be aggressive. They used to. Mercifully, they don't anymore. Sell bananas at the entrance to the temple, at which point you became the target of aggression of the monkeys because they wanted not one banana, they wanted all of your bananas. So it's just like they can be very aggressive, they can be aggressive with one another, they can jump on you, they can be having sex, they can be feeding their babies, they can be giving birth, they can be doing anything at all that it is that monkeys do, and it is 100% inevitable that if you go in the monkey forest, you will find monkeys doing all of these things. So you have to kind of be wise, you know, about how you navigate the monkeys. Furthermore, I go for a walk every morning, and I walk not into, but past the monkey forest. Now, there's no fence around the monkey forest, because if there were, the monkeys would go, fences, what? What do you think this is? They would completely ignore them. So as I walk past the monkey forest, I go through this area of the city where it's a road and there are shops and hotels and restaurants and places to stay. And there are monkeys all over the place. There are monkeys flying through the trees. There are monkeys jumping from roof to roof. There are monkeys in the middle of the road. There are monkeys on the path as I'm walking down the sidewalk. And they're doing all of those things that monkeys do. Okay? So now, I'm not even in the monkey forest. I'm just walking down the street. I just want to walk down the street, you know? And the challenge really is to kind of, how do I walk down the street? Because these monkeys can actually be aggressive, you know? They can engage with me in ways that I'm not particularly interested in having happen on my morning walk. So it's like, how do I navigate these monkeys in a way that is wholesome for me and for the monkeys? Huh? And it's very similar, I think, to how we navigate the monkeys and the birds in our own minds. And we have to kind of understand, first of all, there are monkeys. You know? And for me to kind of insist that they should do something about these monkeys, they should get these monkeys out of here, you know, that it's actually not doable, you know, to kind of set up some kind of barrier. It'd have to be like 400 feet tall for the, you know, to keep the monkeys in. You know, but to kind of have some insistence on my part that the world should be different. You know, whether it's the external world or on our meditation cushion, my own internal world, to have some insistence that, you know, Sharon, you know, there shouldn't be monkeys here. Well, it seems that there are, you know. And so again, the challenge of concentration is, how do we navigate this? And it's about, how do we be wise in navigating it? I'm going to switch back in gears a little bit and remind you of Ayakima's quote at the very beginning, where she says, for starters, in our meditation practice, loving kindness is a support for the kind of navigation that we need to make through the monkeys of our own minds. Kindness toward ourselves and kindness toward the monkeys. However, kindness toward the monkeys doesn't mean that we buy bananas for them. You know? That's not a kindness for anybody. It's not a kindness for the monkeys. Monkeys have plenty of food in the forest. It's not a kindness for the monkeys, nor is it a kindness for me. So I'll tell you what I have to do in order to walk by the monkey forest, but use it as a metaphor because it's really kind of the sort of thing. It's like, okay, this is how we need to navigate in our own minds. So practicing for me on my morning walk involves me being clear about where I am going and why. You know? My intention is to go for a nice morning walk. My intention is not to engage with the monkeys. Okay. Preferably without getting bit by one of them. You know. So to kind of be clear, where am I going and why? So in our meditation practice, where are we going and why? What's our intention here? What's our goal? Assessing our own energies in the moment about whether or not we're up to dealing with the monkeys. So, for example, some mornings I go, you know what? I think I'm going to walk a different way. I'm just not up to navigating the monkeys this morning. And so sometimes, again, with you know, the contents of our minds, we might notice that, you know, this is kind of overwhelming me. I need to kind of step back to maybe some sensory pleasure or some remembrance of my virtue or some loving kindness practice. I need to step back because I don't have the energy to bring awareness to this, because if I touch into it, I'm shifting metaphors, so sorry. It's like I go over Niagara Falls. You know, as soon as I touch into it, I'm so overwhelmed that I can't navigate. I can't keep clear where I'm going and why. Staying committed to the goal, regardless of how cute the monkeys are. And you know, lots of times, so some of these things will arise in our own minds, and we go, "Now that's really interesting. I wonder what that's about." Or, you know, that politician did that thing. Really pisses me off. And furthermore, and they shouldn't really be doing, you know, that we can kind of engage with something in the mind because it's appealing for some reason, you know. And we can kind of be inclined to engage with the monkeys if they're like really cute too. So we can do that, but a little dangerous, but we could do it. So staying committed to our goal, regardless of how cute the monkeys are, how cute or appealing or, you know, how much they pull on us. Not being foolish enough to buy bananas to feed them. Don't feed the monkeys. That's that place in our minds where, you know, where we kind of notice that there's, maybe it's not a monkey, it's a gorilla around, you know, whatever it was we read in the news this morning, or that thing that that relative just said on the phone, you know, that's kind of got me in turmoil, you know, where there's a lot of a turmoil or agitation in the mind, and then we kind of feed it. Do you, you know what I mean by feeding it? You know, it's what I call my and furthermore talk. You know, and furthermore, yeah, and furthermore, they shouldn't have, and furthermore, and this is what I should have said to them, and furthermore, and you know, that place where we're just continually feeding bananas, if you will, to the monkeys of our minds, and to kind of say, okay, can I stop feeding bananas? It's there, but I don't have to feed it. I also don't have to claim that it's my fault that there are monkeys, or that the monkeys want bananas, you know, or that I may have fed them 2 minutes ago. You know, it's just how it goes as we're cultivating this practice, that sometimes we get pulled into feeding the monkeys, or we get pulled into, you know, agitation, or just the agitation arises in the first place, and we could get pulled into that another monkey of, if you will, criticizing ourselves. You know, there's something wrong with me because I'm doing that. You know, that's where the relinquishment comes in, of seeing that there are things to let go of and being skillful about what it is that I need to let go of. Now, if I've made the mistake of taking bananas into the monkey forest, or even I was very careful in the morning when I was walking to check myself out and make sure I had no food in any of my pockets, because the monkeys would find it and go after me if I did, you know. But if I mistakenly carried food in, to just sort of notice that and say, oops, you know, and now what do I do? But to not just keep engaging, and to not kind of engage then with the other monkey of self-criticism. That's where that quality of kindness comes in, or compassion comes in. You know, this is hard, and oops. There are all kinds of oopses for us in our daily life. And staying calm if the monkeys approach or eat your buttons. We have a picture of a monkey sitting on my husband's shoulder with its hand over his eye, pulling the button off of his shirt. And actually, these are the kinds of buttons. These are like coconut buttons. They're made out of coconut, and the monkeys like to eat them. And so my husband, better than I was really much happier being behind the camera. My husband, better than I, was able to actually just stay calm with the monkey with his eye, you know. And I did it, and it's like, okay, this too shall pass, because to try to get into a fight with the monkey is just engaging it further. So wise concentration, knowing how to be with these agitated states of our minds, and indeed with the calm in our minds, which is there, but it passes and something else comes in, and nobody has done anything wrong. So again, it's not monkey genocide or about kind of sequestering ourselves so that we never encounter these kinds of difficulties, but about having some kind of stability of practice that we and skill, if you will, in navigating these difficulties in ways that could possibly lead to more spaciousness and more freedom from suffering. This is Ayakima again. She says, we have to see clearly that it isn't the concentration as such, but the cause for it that needs cultivating. That means renunciation, giving up. Without renunciation, life is a constant striving for something. Renunciation is the answer to all kinds of achievement syndromes, not just in the material world, but even in the spiritual world. Trying to achieve something in the spiritual world is just as foolish as trying to achieve something in the material world. There's nothing to achieve. There's only letting go. As we let go more and more of ego identifications, this is about me, only I have monkeys, I have the best, strongest, most durable monkeys in the whole entire world, there's something, it's my fault that I have monkeys, that's ego identification. It's not true. We all have monkeys. It's how life is on this planet. So letting go of, there's nothing to achieve, there's only letting go. As we let go more and more of ego identifications, desires, and support systems, supports for the engagement, if you will, with the monkeys, bliss will arise. So concentration is about cultivating this capacity to be aware of the contents and the movements of the mind without being overcome or controlled by them, consciously or unconsciously, by those movements. So cultivating over time a mind that's not moved by those storms of greed, hatred, and delusion, or internally, or moved by the worldly winds, by, you know, pleasure and pain and gain and loss and praise and blame and fame and disrepute, that we can see those things, we can feel them, pleasant, unpleasant, I like this, I don't like that, it's hard. But we can experience them, but we're not like pulled into the undertow. I keep switching metaphors. Bear with me. You know, we're not like pulled into the stream. We're not pulled into the turbulence, so that we can see them. But it's about practicing it. It's not about making that like this thing I'm supposed to do and what's wrong with me that I don't. But can we cultivate that capacity in little ways, in big ways? Somebody cuts me off in traffic. A monkey arises of rage or anger or irritation. It's there. It's just there. It's not wrong. It's not bad. I don't have to feed it. Don't have to carry bananas for it. It's just there. We can see it. It arises like a bird. It comes. If I don't feed it, it will also pass. It will pass through. Okay. I don't have to feed it. I read the morning paper. A gorilla arises, you know. Okay. I don't have to feed it. I don't have to turn away and pretend it's not happening, or that thing out there isn't happening. But let's you know, but how do I be skillful with it? Somebody cuts me off in traffic. How do I be skillful with that? I have a feeling about it. I don't like what happened externally, but how do I respond skillfully? I will propose involves the concentration, that's the ability to kind of be aware of the arising internally, to be aware of the arising externally, but to not be driven by either, to not have to respond out there, to not have to be driven by the irritation internally, but to kind of be able to see what's needed, what's skillful. Maybe what's needed is I need to really lay on my horn. You know? Seriously, you know? But, you know, maybe not. Mm-hmm. You know, so to have that capacity to see the arising and to kind of have the spaciousness to see what's needed here. Maybe what's needed with a relationship is to say a very strong, clear, don't do that. Maybe what's needed politically is for me to engage very deliberately in some action or some effort to work with some of the difficulties. Maybe I have the energy for that and the availability for it, and maybe I don't, but to kind of assess those sorts of things. Because if I do it in a way that is simply contributing more to the problem, getting, if you will, into a brawl with the either external or internal monkeys, I'm not really helping anybody. Okay? I know there might be questions about that, which I won't be able to answer. So, okay, let me stop there. That was a long time. What would you like? Do you want to? Are there questions you want to ask now? Do you want to take a pause and come back? What would feel good? Anybody?
I have a question.
Do you want to? Is that okay? If you need to take care of the body, feel free to just go then and come back. And let's take maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and we'll see if, yeah.
Okay.
I think you may have answered it in many ways, but.